You're listening to Marketplace Weekend from APM. Now let's talk about some of the other economic stories going on. And it's the weekend, so let's have brunch. We are out having brunch at the Pullman Kitchen on 2nd Avenue, and I am joined today by Nicholas Carlson from Business Insider and Ben Walsh from the Huffington Post. Welcome to you both.
Hello. How are you?
Thank you.
So, guys, I want to start with the big rollout, this year's build-up, hyped press event, Apple. Here we go. It's coming.
The iPhone 6.
Take it away, Carlson. What do they got? What are we on the hook for to hype this year, man?
So the big things are there's going to be two new iPhones. There's going to be a 4.5-inch one and a 5.5-inch one, Apple's, and then also an iWatch, which is really exciting. And there might even be two screen sizes for those, too. But Apple's finally getting in the phablet business, one of these, like...
Phablet?
It's not a phone. It's not a tablet. It's a phablet.
That is a ridiculous word.
But it's a very fast-growing segment of the market.
I'm sorry, but I cannot take anything seriously that is called a phablet.
Consumers do, though. Basically, people want cheaper phones and bigger phones. And Apple, to date, has made neither of those.
In the context of this week where we have seen celebrities' naked pictures get hacked, show up on the internet, and it's obviously debatable how that happened and whose security flaws are to blame, but the public is thinking about privacy and talking about privacy. Is there an extra onus on companies now to demonstrate that your stuff is private?
Well, people are blaming Apple for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're blaming. And it's interesting. Apple supposedly is going to be announcing a new payment system with the new phone. So you can just sort of, like you can at Starbucks already, sort of wave your phone at the counter and pay instead of a credit card. I've never really seen why credit cards need replacing. They seem to be pretty efficient and useful to me. But are people going to, you know, now that they've seen, you know, naked pictures of Jennifer Lawrence, are they going to sort of say, oh, I'm going to trust Apple with my bank account?
The other thing is that banks themselves aren't necessarily super secure. JP Morgan has been dealing with a potentially state-sponsored Russian hack.
Russian hack, yeah.
Which it's sort of weird to think about a bank this way, but at this point, we need to, is that these are finance companies. They're also multi-billion dollar technology companies. And when they are compromised in even a slight way, they're hundreds of billions of dollars at risk.
Sure. It's in this world of like the NSA, and you can't assume that your emails are private. And I just think that like if you were going to live your life concerned about privacy and security to the utmost, you just wouldn't be able to live the normal American life, or you just would live a very cloister. You just wouldn't be able to participate in society anymore.
I want to talk about a post-recession piece of data that came out that is really interesting to me from the Fed that basically says the gap between rich and poor America widened. But we're not talking about the recession. We're talking about the recovery, where the income of the richest 10% went up by 10%, and families in the bottom 40% saw their income go down over, you know, 2010 to 2013. That was the recovery.
Yeah.
What does that mean for normal people?
You know, when I think about the recovery, I think a lot about it. It was an asset recovery. The stock market has been great since 2009. The housing market has recovered a lot. But if you look at that article, it says the
article in the Wall Street Journal. Yeah.
The article says that like the percentage of ownership of assets has really declined. So like people who don't own anything besides, you know, they're just getting their paycheck and paying their rent or things like that. They're not invested in anything. They haven't really seen. They haven't benefited from any sort of recovery at all.
It could also have helped people by preventing things from being worse than they were.
Right.
So there's no, to use geeky language, there's no null case here that we can test against not having done QE.
Preventing a negative is really hard to explain.
Exactly. But I think there is a strong case, what Nick said, basically, that this has been an asset-based recovery. The kind of rate of increase of GDP and wage growth has just not been there in the last couple of years, but the stock market has been on a tear, and so have housing prices. And the wealthiest Americans both own those things, and then also a lot of times their incomes are tied to the performance of those assets, whether it's working in the financial sector or simply just receiving the income from assets that they've already invested.
Can you think of anything that would change that picture?
You'd have to see broad-based wage growth in the kind of mid-hourly workers, right. So people who make between, call it $15 and $30 an hour, if all of a sudden they were making between $20 and $35 an hour, that would be a significant change.
We could have like a massive, massive philosophical change about what companies and corporations are supposed to do. And so sort of in Asia, there's more constituents to what a corporation should do. It should take care of its employees, it should take care of its customers, and it should take care of its shareholders. Here, it's just all about the shareholders. And so that just means profit growth and keeping wages as low as possible and sort of...
Which just helps wealthy people who already own stock.
Exactly. It helps that the people who own these assets.
The dividing line and the kind of the catchphrase for the division that Nick is talking about is shareholder capitalism versus stakeholder capitalism. And so the idea is that, you know, American companies basically pretty much without fail look to do good by their shareholders,
yeah.
Which means an increasing stock price and paying cash back in the form of dividends or buying back stock. Other companies in Europe and Asia have this kind of broader view, and they look at what are called stakeholders, just, you know, pretty much everybody who touches the company in almost any way, including and especially employees and customers.
Next week, we're taking the show on the road, and Ben Walsh is coming with us. Thanks to you both, Nicholas Carlson, chief correspondent for Business Insider, and Ben Walsh, money and finance reporter for the Huffington Post.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.